Good morning. As the patriarch of this little triumvirate, you see, I get to go first and tell you everything about Hanukkah you want to know, but were afraid to ask. First of all, the spelling. There are 8 legitimate spellings of the word Hanukkah in English. It can begin with H or CH. It can have 1 N or 2 N's. It can have 1 K or 2 K's. It can end in A or A-H. But there is only one correct way to pronounce the word. And if you wish to be mavens, that is Yiddish for an expert, a connoisseur. Hanukkah is not pronounced Hanukkah, but Chanukah, with that C-H, a little gargle, like chutzpah and Chanukah. And you will be regarded as a true maven when you say Chanukah the correct way. The etymology of the word, in Hebrew it means dedication, the rededication of the temple after it was defiled. It also colloquially means the festival of lights, the menorah, the traditional 8-branched candelabra with a shamus on top as number 9. And the shamus is interpreted as showing that one can give light and love to others without losing any part of one's own radiance. The history of this holiday is based on a secular event. It is not a religious holiday. And it tells the story of the freedom fighter, Judah the Maccabee. Maccabee means hammer. It was his nom de guerre. And the Maccabees are the elite Jewish fighting force similar to our Navy SEALs. It began around 167 BC when the Greco-Syrian king Antiochus IV, otherwise known as Epiphanes or the Risen God, decreed that the Jewish temples would now be dedicated to Greek polytheism, and he had his priests bring in idols and statues like of Zeus, defiled the altar, and forbid, God forbid, circumcisions in the Holy Temple. This did not sit well with the Jewish priests, and one by the name of Mattathias in the city of Modin, a short distance from Jerusalem, took offense about being told to bow down to Zeus in his own temple and slew the Greek prelate. This led to a small revolution, a guerrilla campaign led by his son Judah the Maccabee, and against rather incredible odds, an unarmed, untrained guerrilla force led by Judah defeated the forces of Antiochus 2.5 years later in 165 BC, leading to the rededication of the temple in Jerusalem, which had been defiled by the forces of Antiochus. So, as in any good rededication, there is an eternal light that sits over the Ark of the Covenant, that is the Torah, the most holy document in the Jewish faith. And there was only oil left enough for one day, but miraculously it burned for 8 days until it was resupplied in the Holy Temple in Jerusalem. And so, quote, the miracle of this campaign. Now, as far as miracles go, in my opinion, this sits pretty low on the totem pole. We Jews are good at miracles. Talk about the splitting of the Red Sea for Moses, the receiving of the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai, Elijah going up in a chariot. Those are real miracles. This is a minor miracle because, quite frankly, this is a minor holiday. The Jewish culture and faith does not celebrate warfare. And this holiday is in commemoration of a defeat of other forces, the killing of people, and it is not a major holiday. But putting it in perspective, what has happened in this country, the Jewish culture needed an antidote to Christmas, some way of bringing light and good cheer at a time where the Christian religion, being dominant, was celebrating Christmas. So in a way, it was transmogrified into something greater than what would be celebrated in the European shtetls and in other Jewish communities overseas. And it was set up for youngsters like me who were envious about Christmas trees, something I always wanted in our house. We didn't have a Christmas tree. So, as part of this holiday, we invented the Hanukkah bush, which isn't much of a Christmas tree at all, just a bush. We put a few lights on it. And instead of exchanging gifts on one day, on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve, we could do it for 8 days. And we developed some Hanukkah gelt. Gelt means money. We would receive money, the children would, or we would receive those candies wrapped in gold leaf. And we would exchange those items. We also had a particular game that we liked to play, the dreidel game. The dreidel is a top. The game is put and take, depending on which Hebrew letter pops up. You take half the pot, all the pot, or you put in, or you get nun, nothing, which in Yiddish we'd call bupkis. And we'd spin it and sing a little song, dreidel, 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 I made it out of clay, and when it's dry and ready, with dreidel I will play. But there is also some religious significance to this. In the European shtetls, in Eastern Europe and Western Russia, Jews were not permitted to pray or observe their religion in public. And so this little game was invented. It's a secret code. Each of these letters is in reference to a word. Nes Gadol Chaim Sham. Here a great miracle happened. So they would celebrate the freedom of the Jews at the time of Hanukkah. And in addition, Hanukkah also for us means having a particular delicious dish called potato latkes, which has been brought into this society like hash brown potatoes. But trust me, our latkes is better. And in our family, Mary, bless her heart, very ecumenical, we celebrate Christmas and Hanukkah. We lighted candles for 8 days. We played the dreidel game. And thank you, Mary, for continuing our tradition and your tradition. And here we celebrate it with our Unitarian brethren. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My copy of the order of service that I was last, but okay. I guess we all know our ages now. Okay, now my family always had a Christmas tree and a menorah. As a very young kid, I felt special that we celebrated both. Now, we didn't really know anything about either of them because we did do the gift thing. We had gifts every night, but we didn't have a lot of gifts because I had a December 17th birthday, and pretty soon my youngest kid sister came along, and she had a December 25th birthday. So we had a lot to celebrate anyway. In our house, as far as gifts were concerned, which basically was all the kids cared about, was the gifts. That's what it was about, and the holidays were just sort of an excuse. They were trappings that helped us fit into what our primarily Jewish friends and the rest of the world around us, the secular world, were doing at this time of year. Our household had its birthdays and its gifts. Now, Judaism itself has always been a problem for me in my life. It was one aspect of my parents never wanting to join a club that would have them as a member. So they weren't part of any synagogue, they weren't part of any church. They were very free thinkers, and they said, "Oh, Bob, you can go to any of your friends' churches you want to. Just go ahead, and if you want to go to synagogue, you can go with your friends at the synagogue too." Most of my friends were Jewish, and my parents' friends were all Jewish, so I had like little cousins, not blood cousins, but California cousins where I grew up. The rest of my relatives were in the East Coast, so I didn't see them much. But even so, through those friends, parents' friends, kids, and kids I went to school with, Jewish primarily, and then the Christian ones too, but I was mostly friends with Jewish kids, I had extended paternal and maternal families, and I got a very deep connection with Judaism, with the worlds of both conservative and reform Judaism. In California, there weren't very many Orthodox. In fact, I don't think I ever met an Orthodox or even saw one until I went up to Berkeley, and there was a lot more variety there. But conservative and reform Judaism was something I knew the difference of. Reform Judaism was more like what we do here. English sermons, not as much Hebrew, just a little. So those are the synagogues I went to, were the Reform synagogues. But somehow through all of this exposure from before I can remember until I went away to school, I got a strong connection with Judaism. I got the connection that holidays matter. We always did celebrate Jewish holidays. Again, my parents didn't participate in any synagogue, but they had Jewish friends, so we always got invited to seders. And like Alan says, Hanukkah was a minor holiday, so we never got invited anywhere because there was nowhere to go to. Everybody just had their menorahs. It was a family holiday. It was our way of doing gifts and being part of the dominant culture. So, but it did matter, and Hanukkah didn't matter so much as the other ones did because the other ones happened every year, and that's a diversion I won't go into now. But I knew they were important because my Jewish friends all took off from school on the real holidays. I didn't because, you know, my parents, they weren't going to countenance leaving school, which was way more important than anything since I had no synagogue to go to. So I would be the only Jewish kid in school on the Jewish holidays. Again, I'm getting off of Hanukkah. So let's go back to the Hanukkah holiday. There was a lot more to it to me, even from the very beginning, than the fact that it was just an excuse to do something during Christmas. You see, it was a miracle story, and it was about our forebears being fighters and being able to win over incredible odds and get their temple back. And to me, that was a really cool thing. I thought it was an important thing to learn about my forebears, and it also happened to be very consistent with the American story of fighting for what's right and for freedom and breaking off from the king in England and all that. See, it was very much, to me, a way of saying the Jews are a big part of real life. We're not different. And that was pretty cool to me. So it also had a miracle. It had the light miracle. And while Alan discounts how important the miracle was because it wasn't as cool as a chariot going to the sun or parting of the Red Sea, there was to me a very clear connection. See, when I was growing up, we had Charlton Heston parted the Red Sea in that movie, whatever it was called. You know the one I mean. Anyway, that was in the 50s. I grew up in the 50s, and to me that was a really real story. It was real because I knew about the lights. I knew about the 8 days of oil, and so these were our miracles. And of course, how could one not know about the the Christmas miracles about the virgin birth and all that stuff because you heard about nothing else and you heard about Santa. That's a miracle too. And you couldn't not know about that stuff when you're a kid growing up. But see, we had our miracles as Jews as well. And so it was important to have cool stories that we could believe until we were too old to believe in them anymore. But they still resonated with us. So the Ten Commandments wasn't just another movie to me. It was a very important story about my forebears and what they did. And then as I got older, of course, it got to be symbolic instead of literal. So I never really got any of this from my parents. Like I said, no, they didn't join anything. They also, one of them was an atheist, self-professed. The other was a self-professed agnostic. But I was surrounded by Jewish friends. I went to school and played with Jewish kids. All my cousins were raised with these ideas, and I saw them a couple times a year when we would go back east. So when I light the light of the menorah candles and I say the blessing, which sounds exactly like the one we did for Shabbat there, except instead of saying Ner Shel Shabbat, you say Ner Shel Hanukkah, a different set of candles is all that is, but it's the exact same words. So whenever I say a blessing over the Hanukkah candles, and actually over any candles we light, which is a lot of candles if you're a Jew, I'm drawn back to over 5,700 years of tradition where candles are lit every Shabbat Eve, and families gather, and children are taught some basic lessons. They should do no harm and should continually perform good deeds to heal the world. That's really simple theology, and you kind of start getting that even before you go to Hebrew school. And I think it's pretty hard to beat that theology. So that's why I'm very glad that we have the Hanukkah bush and those candles as well as all the other ones.
Good morning. Hanukkah was always a special opportunity to be with my parents in a quiet, uninterrupted moment during my favorite season of the year. I am an only child, and what that meant to me at Hanukkah was that my parents were mine alone, and I was theirs. My Judaism has been passed down from my mother and grandmother and so on back through time. My dad was raised in the Christian Science tradition, so we celebrated Christmas too. We had a Christmas tree, but we put a bagel on top. Actually, in my childhood home, we embraced every opportunity to celebrate. Every opportunity. None of my friends were Jewish, so our Hanukkah celebrations were ours alone, too. What child wouldn't be excited about a gift-giving holiday that lasts for 8 days? Eight! It was so exciting. And I was an only child, so I was the only one that got the presents. Oh, my God. Okay. Although the anticipation was about the gifts, the real joy of Hanukkah was the time spent in a darkened room, standing together, embracing each other, facing the menorah with its flickering candles. Our family tradition was to light the shamus and the rest of the increasing number of candles while my mom said the blessing that she remembered from her childhood. Once the candles were lit, we stood in silence for a moment, and then we each spoke the names of those we were holding in our good thoughts and prayers. My earliest Hanukkah memories are of looking into my parents' eyes where the flames were reflected and hearing about how important we were to each other and who of our friends were in need of prayers. Those early childhood Hanukkahs were magical. It was all about the three of us, flickering flames and the warmth of quiet time together. As I grew up, the story of Judah Maccabee and the miracle in the temple became a part of that time of the year, especially as my friends asked about the holiday that I was getting so excited about. I realized that there was more to the story and the tradition of Hanukkah as I did my own investigations and spent more time with other Jews and those interested in many faith traditions. Growing up in the hills of Oakland and Berkeley, California, in the 60s and 70s, our practice of Jewish and other faith traditions was more freeform than traditional. We had different menorahs through the years, sometimes a collection of sand candles we had made at the beach or one made from a piece of wood we'd picked up on a walk. Although I knew that Hanukkah, or the Festival of Lights, was a celebration about the miracle of one day's supply of oil lasting for 8 days, we were in the midst of the Vietnam War, and the victorious warriors of the Hanukkah story gave me something to be proud of. Not only were we free form in our religious practices, but we were also active participants at peace rallies and other political gatherings with our Volkswagen van. I was a hippie before all my friends were. The Hanukkah story was one of hope and miracles to a passionate young girl in an age of war and nuclear threat and political leaders that lied and cheated. Those candles burned very brightly for me. As my spiritual growth continued, this time of year had new revelations. Christmas was all around us, and the story of Jesus' birth was everywhere. I loved going to church services with my friends to hear the music and songs and to be among a huge room full of people who believed in something deeply. The joy literally washed over me, and it was miraculous. The love they felt for the baby Jesus was manifest in their faces as they sang and passed the peace among their fellow congregants. Christmas wasn't about presents. It was about the birth of their Messiah, their connection to God. I honored the depth of feeling and their beliefs, but I felt differently about that connection to God. In my free-form practices, stories were told, feelings were expressed, and questions were asked. In my circle of friends and family, beliefs evolved as those questions were explored. Some things resonated and stayed with me. I didn't know if I was waiting for the Messiah of my Jewish people. What I did know was that I had a direct connection to God, and that, although the teachings of Jesus were wonderful to the point of possibly being divine, I didn't need him to connect with the divine. That connection was strong and immediate, and I didn't need a church or a synagogue to feel it. The power of the church and the synagogue for me was the people around me. I connected with them, and that was divine. What I did need was time outside to feel connected to the physical and spiritual world around me. When I was out in the woods or at the beach, my feeling of divine connection was the strongest. My God time was when I was alone outside. The fresh air, the sounds of wind in the trees or crashing surf, the feel of the earth below my feet, and the certainty that I was part of something greater. That was my connection to God. Hanukkah traditions have an elemental physical world aspect to them too, moving from the darkness into the light, as the earth does this time of year, and candles representing the miraculous flame that burned for 8 days. There is a spiritual affinity that resonates with the earth and flame that is celebrated when we light the candles and connect with each other in the light. I'd like to read a prayer of sorts from Aldo Leopold, a lover of earth and her animals and trees. As I read Leopold's words, please look into these candles and that are lit here today and reflect upon your community of beloved family and friends, and hold those who are in need of good thoughts and prayers in your heart, and they will be lifted up by the combined love in this room this morning. The pine's new year begins when the terminal bud becomes the candle. Whoever coined that name for the new growth had subtlety in his soul. For he who lives with pines knows that candle has a deeper meaning. For at its tip burns the eternal flame that lights a path into the future.